Palisade Global Investments is pleased to present the Hard Asset Conference on Jekyll Island, with keynote addresses by Eric Sprott and Dr. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island. The event will be sponsored by Triumph Gold Corp., currently drilling its 100% owned Free Gold Mountain project in the Yukon, and by Mexican Gold Corp., just weeks away from publishing its maiden resource on its Las Minas Gold project in Veracruz State, Mexico. Come join us at the Jekyll Island Club from October 19th to the 22nd. The event is limited to just 50 participants. Visit palisadeconference.com for more information. Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Cullen Cattell. On the line with us today is returning guest to the program and a speaker at our event in Jekyll Island from October 19th until the 22nd, Matt Geiger. Matt, welcome back to the program.
Cullen, thank you for having me back. And I'm looking forward to seeing you guys in person out of Jekyll Island in October. Now you got a couple quality issuers there as well. Triumph, Mexican Gold, we're shareholders of Mexican Gold. And I've always loved spending time with your group and your investing network.
Yeah, great. Well, I can't wait to have you back down there. Our event in Belize was awesome, and you gave a great talk down there. And I kind of want to use this 15 minutes we have here to further that discussion that you would have had there, talking about the market conditions and what you're looking at. For listeners that don't know, you run a fund that's resource-focused called MJG Capital Fund. And Matt, we just broke through $1,300 gold, so I think that's a good place to start. What do you see in terms of market conditions moving forward here?
Well, it's been an exciting start to the week, needless to say. Gold has absolutely blasted through that $1,300 number. Honestly, though, for those of us that were operating under the thesis that the hard asset market bottomed in January 2016, this shouldn't actually come as much of a surprise. It's more a matter of when we were going to see this happen versus if. And honestly, we have seen both metal prices and equities in the red since roughly March of this year through just a couple weeks ago. But from my eyes, and I think this breakthrough 1300 confirms this, this is much more of a consolidation period before the next leg in this bull market versus, you know, downside where we're going to test the lows that we saw in 2015. So I think this actually has been a pretty healthy period. There's a good 6 to 7 months for astute investors to get involved with in private placements with quality terms. Unfortunately, one of the downsides of this hotness we're seeing in the gold price is that we're not going to get those full 2-year warrants, 3-year warrants with no accelerators anymore. There's just going to be a lot more demand for investors to get into these placements. So I hope your listeners were taking advantage of the weakness we saw in Q2 of this year.
Agreed. Well, you know, the picture right now, for me, from my standpoint, is incredibly bullish, and I felt that way for a few weeks. You have the base metal prices like copper, zinc, lead, even nickel starting to break out. A lot of them are at 52-week highs. You look at gold, it's performed pretty well. I think some investors were concerned that it wasn't performing better in light of the fact that the U.S. dollar had seen such a bad year so far. But now that you have gold breaking out, it really seems to confirm that bullish picture. Is there anything that has you worried, though, that this could pull back below 1300 and we enter back into consolidation?
Potentially. I'm not a technician. And we don't base our investment decisions based off of oscillations in the price of gold. I mean, the way that we've pushed through that 1300 number makes me believe that we're much more likely to pass through 1400 than to break back down into that 1200 to 1300 range that we've been kind of bouncing between like a pinball. But in all honesty, I'm excited for hard assets across the board. I mean, you mentioned precious metals, which basically led us have led this bull market, and really we're the first to move in January 2016. We're seeing a lot of life with the base metals. You know, copper and zinc are obvious examples of metals that are hitting, you know, multi-year highs just over the past week. And then the energy metals are also very exciting. Some of these minor metals like vanadium, battery metals like cobalt and nickel are seeing a lot of a lot of attention being paid to them. And I think this is going to be a great story for 2 to 3 years. The most contrarian plays in the space from what I can see right now are uranium and the ag minerals. So there's no major reason to rush into them at this moment. But if you're looking for the most value, I would also look to those two areas as well.
Matt, you've said on air before and in conversations with me that in terms of an exit point when the fund might start to wind down in the future or remove some allocation towards resources could be sometime around 2019. Now, that discussion we had was probably close to 6 months to a year ago already before we had this consolidation period. Do you still see that time frame as when these metals might start to get frothy and the associated stocks, or has that been pushed back?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't have a crystal ball. All I can do is, give my best guess. We're actually going to stick to our guns with that. And the concept is right now we're basically 100% exposed to metals, whether it be base, precious, or energy. It's going to remain that way through mid-2019. I'm very, very confident that this rally is going to go through at least that long. We're then going to take most of our chips off the table, maybe 60%. We'll still have 40% of the fund with exposure to these metals that I just mentioned, but we'll diversify into some other resource holdings that fit our mandate but aren't correlated to the mining cycle, like forestry, agriculture, water rights, fish farming, et cetera. The reason for that is kind of twofold. The first is that we've been exposed to this space since the very beginning, so I don't want to get too greedy. There is a chance that this rally will last into 2020, 2021, 2022. And I'm all for that. We just won't be at 100% exposure for that whole time. I want to make sure that we stay diversified, and the gains that we're going to see in the next 2 years in particular are going to be spectacular. And, I don't want to get too greedy. We're very well positioned for this upcoming cycle.
Great. I've got some show notes here, and you were talking about silver as one of your favorite metals. Silver is very cheap right now compared to the price of gold, and a lot of people have forgotten about silver, haven't really mentioned it. It has not broken out yet. Why do you like silver so much?
Well, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Gold is obviously very attractive right now. I think on a relative basis to almost all other asset classes out there, you're going to see massive outperformance of the gold price and gold equities over the next 2 to 3 years. Again, there's a lot of liquidity out there in the system, a lot of frothy asset classes, and somehow gold has yet to really catch a bid, even though we're starting to see some movement. I'm a big gold fan, but silver's gold on steroids, and I really like it a fair amount more than gold for the following reasons. The first is that I'm a sucker for industrial demand. I like the metals that allow us to live our 21st century lifestyle. Gold obviously provides a lot of security and has massive investment demand. Gives people some certainty in their portfolio, and that does have value. But by the same token, only 10% of gold is actually used in industrial purposes and helps us live the way we do. Silver, 50 to 60% of demand is going to industrial uses. And some important ones to note would be photovoltaic solar cells. You see silver demand having gone from 1 million ounces per year for PVs in 2002 to now present day, we're seeing 83 million ounces go towards photovoltaic solar cells in 2016. So that's an 83x increase in just 14 years. Also, silver is important in the production of ethylene oxide, which is basically detergent. It's used for car coolants, laundry soap, as the world gets richer and as people continue to move into the middle class, you see that's very correlated with global GDP. So I really like the fact that silver helps us live the way we do. Additionally, as you mentioned, the gold to silver ratio is around 80 right now. If you look at this historically, this is pretty much as high as you'll see the ratio get. So on a relative standpoint, silver does look very attractive to gold. Remember back hundreds of years ago, governments would tie silver to the gold price at, 6-to-1 or a 10-to-1 or a 16-to-1 ratio. So we're completely divorced from that right now at 80-to-1. Additionally, last year we saw a decline in global silver production. It was literally the first time in 14 years that we've seen year-over-year global silver production actually go down. I think that's been underappreciated by the market, and will help price increases going forward. And then the final point here is, assuming that the Guatemalan Supreme Court does confirm what we were hearing last week, it's possible that Tahoe Resources Escobal mine down in Guatemala may be out of production for at least 18 months, if not longer. This is a massive mine. I think it's the ninth largest. I think Tahoe is the ninth largest silver producer globally. And if this is the case, this is 3% of global supply that's unexpectedly gone just over the past 90 days. So, you know, there are a lot of reasons to like silver right now.
Matt, as you know, I lived in Guatemala for a couple of years, and in fact was trying to do some mining down there myself. And it's incredible when you're working with a government like the Guatemalan government, just how irrational it can act. And I think it might be the ninth largest mine, but it's also maybe the second richest silver mine in the world. And for that to come offline is certain to have ramifications, but also a lesson in the political instability associated to the mining sector.
Sure. I mean, it's a phenomenal asset, but this is also a two-way street. And while I do feel that Guatemala is acting irrationally and is hurting foreign direct investment over the upcoming years, but by these kind of rash decisions, it is a two-way street, and Tahoe should have done a better job with CSR ultimately, and making sure that the communities around the Escobal mine were more on side with the project and more incentivized. So it does go both ways, and it is a shame for such a phenomenal asset to potentially be out of production for close to 2 years, maybe longer.
Yeah, that's a good point. I want to stick with the precious metals theme and move to the other two precious metals or semi-precious metals, which are the PGMs, platinum and palladium. They've been lagging gold, much like silver, maybe not to the same degree, or I should say platinum has been lagging. Palladium's actually performing nicely, but platinum's very, very below the price of gold, which is unusual historically. What do you think about those metals?
Yeah, from a historical standpoint, I do think one could see some value in platinum and palladium. That said, personally and for the fund, we're really avoiding them like the plague. And unless you have a specific individual story that you see tremendous upside to, I would advise investors to be very cautious with the space. The main reason is the demand picture, and depending on what we see in terms of electric vehicle adoption over these upcoming years. I was just looking at a study from UBS, and it's pretty fascinating. And again, this does depend on adoption rates. So there are variables that are very hard to know right now. But we could see up to 50% of PGM demand disappear over the next 5 to 10 years, depending how quickly people adopt EVs. And of course, the reason for this is that in internal combustion engines, PGMs have been used and employed as catalytic converters. And so this helps minimize emissions and make the whole ICE engine cleaner. That said, if we're shifting to electric cars, current Teslas, Chevy Bolts, basically across the spectrum, there's no PGMs used at all in those vehicles. So I think this is something that's going to weigh on that entire industry for years. And I'm not sure the investment community as a whole appreciates the uncertainty and demand here.
Matt, let's finish up here going back to silver and talking about your favorite metal and how you're playing it. Also, any specific companies, feel free to mention those. People, listeners, definitely like to hear what you're buying.
Sure. Yeah, so, I mean, we're not going out there and buying common shares of the big producers or the big royalty companies. I mean, we're really trying to pick our spots and make some really phenomenal investments, kind of focused on, we'll say, three buckets here. The first is high-quality private placements with management teams that have done it before. So if I'm going to invest in a single asset story, I don't want to buy those shares on the common market. I want to wait till a placement comes. And if management announces a placement, I want to see a full warrant, minimum of 2 years, potentially even 3, 4, 5 years on that warrant, depending on the story. And I want to see management teams that have made investors money in the past. And so these are very stringent requirements. Makes me pass on a lot of deals, which, you know, quite possibly will perform really well. However, two that I'm quite excited about that we participated in over the summer. The first was Southern Silver, which is working on the Cerro Las Minitas project down in Mexico. Company is 30% owned by the Electrum Group. That's Tom Kaplan's group out of New York. He's serially successful in the mineral space. And we are also able to just get phenomenal terms there, a full three-year warrant, no accelerator. That story provides excellent leverage to increases in the price of silver. So I was excited about that one. And then we also recently did a deal called Discovery Metals. That's Marco Day's most recent deal. They have a highly prospective VMS district in northern Mexico that has seen very little work over the past 30 to 40 years. They were able to go out and raise $10 million, which, you know, for a startup company kind of shows the quality of management and shows that O'Day and team have great access to capital. And we were able to get full two-year warrants, no accelerators there. And stock has been performing pretty well recently, although on very, very light volumes. So I'm excited about both those names. And of course, the kicker is that neither company will have to come back to market for another 12 months or so. So we're going to see a lot of news flow, hopefully some share price appreciation before they have to think about raising more money. Kind of the second bucket we're looking at are the junior royalty companies. So these aren't the Sandstorms or the Francos or Silver Wheatons or Wheaton Precious Metals of the world. These are the smaller names. Two examples I have for you. One is Brett Heath's Metalla, who we've recently been buying common shares just over the past 4 to 5 weeks and establishing a position in the low 50s. I really like this name. I like the way Brett thinks. I like the investor base that he's brought in. There's a lot of high-profile investors involved with this name that has a very small market cap at the moment. Realistically, it's pretty easy to understand. Right now, Metalla is seen they're getting valued at about 6x their cash flows. Generally, the big boys who I just mentioned, you'll see them being valued at 20 to 24x cash flows. And kind of Metalla's peers, you'll generally see valued at around 10 to 12x cash flows. So even to be valued at par with the other junior royalty companies, I think Metalla shares have to double and they'd still be very reasonably priced. So I like that name a lot. And then we've also been long-term shareholders of a company called Golden Valley Mines. This is a holding company, but in essence, it's a play on Abitibi Royalties, which is another one of these junior royalty companies, which I think is being overlooked by the general market as a very, very high quality royalty on the Canadian Malartic mine. And GZZ is just a way to get extra leverage to that. Golden Valley actually holds 55 million in shares of Abitibi Royalty. That's 55 million Canadian, and their market cap's currently below 40 Canadian. So it's a bit of a value play on top of a bet on a junior royalty company, and that's Abitibi Royalties. And yeah, then the third bucket, as you know, we're big fans of prospect generators. It has to be the right management team, though. You need both the geological acumen to go stake the right land and do the appropriate amount of work. And then you also need connections with the bigger mining cos to be able to market your properties when they're ready to be drilled and bring in the big boys to actually spend bucks on your property, hopefully creating value, but in a worst case scenario, won't result in any dilution for you. You know, one prospect generator that we own is Riverside Resources. We participated in their most recent placement, but share price is actually down quite a bit from that. So I would encourage investors to get involved below 40 cents. I think we're at 37 right now while they have the opportunity, if they want some prospect generator exposure. Two other names that we don't own currently, but are focused almost exclusively on gold and silver are Evrim Resources, focused on Mexico, great team there, and also Mirasol, who's almost focused exclusively on precious metals down in Argentina. So those are some places to look if you want to get involved in kind of the earlier stage exploration game with the right people.
In full disclosure, Palisade owns shares of Sama Resources as well as Metalla, but those are all names that I'm familiar with. And Matt, I appreciate you coming on the program and sharing your due diligence and background work on these companies and giving some opinions on them to our listeners. They're definitely much appreciated. Matt, looking forward to having you down at the conference in the end of October on Jekyll Island and hearing some more of your thoughts as the market develops between now and then.
Appreciate it, Colin. Always good to be on. Again, this is bittersweet. We have gold prices going up. Our portfolios are looking green. By the same token, we're not going to get those really juicy deal terms anymore. So it is a double-edged sword, but life is good here, and I look forward to seeing you in Jekyll Island in October.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?